They sparred on the campaign trail, but presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has chosen California Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate, saying just days ago,
"I don't hold grudges, and I made it really clear that I don't hold grudges."
We'll hear more on the historic selection and details about how Harris could impact Biden's campaign. Plus, Russia has registered the world's first COVID-19 vaccine.
The main overarching reaction to this has been skepticism.
And who wants to salsa alone? Dance teachers adapt in the age of social distancing. It's Tuesday, August 11th. I'm Shelby Holliday for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Presumptive Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden has selected California Senator Kamala Harris to be his running mate. She will be the first Black woman to be nominated for vice president by a major party. WSJ national politics reporter Tarini Pardee has more.
The big advantage for Kamala Harris is that she's run for president before. She's been publicly vetted. She's campaigned before on the national stage. Voters know her. Donors know her. So she would also be able to raise money for Biden's campaign pretty quickly because she has a robust donor network. She also has been positioning herself as an expert on criminal justice reform in recent weeks in the aftermath of George Floyd's killing. So she definitely has certain advantages.
But Tarini says the pick isn't without risks for Biden.
The biggest negative that came out when she was running for president was her record as a prosecutor and attorney general of California was scrutinized by especially the left. A lot of progressives thought that she didn't do enough, to make the criminal justice system more fair for minorities in particular. And she faced a lot of scrutiny on that front. A lot of those critics have since said that maybe they were too harsh on her. But it's clear there are going to be continued questions about her criminal justice record.
Biden and Harris are expected to appear together tomorrow. Airbnb is close to filing for an initial public offering, according to people familiar with the matter. If it does, our reporter Maureen Farrell says it would mark a dramatic turnaround for the home sharing company.
Earlier this year, they were talking about going public. We had reported they were close to filing, and then the pandemic hit. And it really hurt their business immediately. It was a tough time for travel companies. But as you could probably see, I bet if you're talking to friends and family, I've certainly heard this. You know, most people I know are either renting and doing something through Airbnb or trying to, and it's this summer or this fall. So it seems like bookings have gone up pretty dramatically. They've had a fairly sharp rebound. So it seems like it's, the time suddenly seemed right for Airbnb to try to go public.
Businesses in Chicago are assessing the damage done by hundreds of looters in the city's major shopping areas earlier this week. While city officials are taking steps to prevent further damage, some business owners are thinking about closing for good. Our senior Midwest correspondent Joe Barrett reports.
They're kind of paralyzed. I mean, this is the second round for Chicago, and, some of these guys have lost everything that they had in their inventory. Others are just feeling like their business is so far down that they're not sure how long they can go. And, even if the looting stopped today, the perception has changed of the city and the safety that people would feel here. So they're just concerned that they'll be able to bounce back from this.
And we talked about it yesterday on the podcast. Today, the Big Ten Conference announced there will be no games this fall. The conference is postponing football and other fall sports until at least the spring, citing the potential risks of coronavirus to student athletes. The decision puts pressure on the rest of college football's major conferences to follow suit and cancel their seasons. Earlier this week, President Trump and Vice President Pence had both tweeted that college football should be played, and players had mounted social media campaigns saying they wanted to get on the field. After the break, Russia is claiming victory in the race to develop a coronavirus vaccine. We'll tell you why the announcement has been met with skepticism. Today, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced that the country had registered the world's first COVID-19 vaccine. It's been dubbed Sputnik V, like the first satellite from the space race. The move marked a milestone in the new global race for a coronavirus vaccine. But it was immediately met with skepticism and safety concerns. Our reporter Jared Hopkins joins me now to help us make sense of the announcement. So, Jared, first, can you just walk us through some of the basics? What do we know about the vaccine, and how was it created?
So this vaccine in Russia was developed basically within its own infrastructure and has been tested, two rounds of testing, and a third is planned after registration. But it is expected to be rolled out relatively widely to, hundreds of thousands of people in Russia. But it is at this point, it's registered is a big deal in Russia in terms of its development process of how drugs are developed out there. But it also puts it ahead of the U.S. and European and Asian companies that are and researchers that are developing vaccines.
What kind of reaction did we see from around the world and even from people in Russia?
So the main overarching reaction to this has been skepticism. One question is whether or not Russia might have sort of skipped steps or is rushing too quickly for this. So there's been a lot of caution that's been offered both from, U.S. and westernized vaccine experts as well as others. It's a very different sort of way of development as opposed to maybe how things are developed here in the U.S. for vaccines.
Yeah. Can you just elaborate on that? How is the testing in Russia different from testing in the U.S.?
So this vaccine went through some testing. It was testing initially on soldiers, actually, one healthy segment of society in Russia. But in the U.S., typical vaccine will be tested on a small number of volunteers and for safety, and then it moves on to a second phase where it's tested usually in hundreds of people to see if it works safely. And then the third phase, which is thousands of individuals. And this happens over the course of years, maybe a decade or something like that for vaccines typically. And most vaccines don't work. They falter through these rounds of testing. It should be noted that, for COVID-19 vaccines, even in the U.S., the development is going quicker than normal. It is going quicker. It hasn't necessarily gone as quickly as Russia, but that's because there's a huge investment from the U.S. government that is allowing for this to go forward. And then there's been some scientific breakthroughs that have allowed for it, too. But vaccine development in the U.S. is generally a very, very slow process.
Does this announcement put any sort of pressure on the FDA to fast track a vaccine?
Well, there's a lot of concern of whether or not the FDA will be politically pressured. The FDA has assured that it is not being pressured and that it is going to evaluate vaccines that work safely and work effectively. Their bar has been that any vaccine to be authorized, either on an emergency use basis, has to have a 50% efficacy rate, which means that it works in half the people who take it, or has a chance to work half the people who take it. There are a number of vaccines in the U.S. that are now being tested in late-stage testing, in trials that are seeking to enroll 30,000 people in just a matter of, 2 months.
Earlier this year, the U.S., the U.K., and Canada accused Russia of hacking into international institutions in order to steal COVID-19 vaccine information. Russia has denied those accusations, but is there any evidence that hacking helped develop this vaccine?
At this point, I don't know if we know all the answers to these sorts of things, but I think that vaccines right now are maybe the most watched kind of effort here to fight the coronavirus around the world, if not the most or one of the most. So, if there's anything that's going to come out soon, it might come out.
That was WSJ reporter Jared Hopkins. And finally, we've figured out how to work remotely and catch up with family and friends on video calls. But some things are pretty hard to do while social distancing, like salsa dancing. If you want to learn this steamy Latin dance right now, online video lessons might be your only option. Our reporter Kajal Vijas says salsa instructors and students are trying their best to make it work.
It's quite an interesting experience because you see a lot of people connecting and they're having trouble. Either they're banging into their cupboard or their bed. One guy I saw, his cat kind of weaving through his legs every time he was doing different steps and he was trying to shoo it away. Another big complaint that I heard from participants is that they can't do the spin moves because of the carpeting, either in their house or wherever they happen to be confined. And so there's several different limitations, but by and large, I guess if they're dedicated to learning, they can do so in any environment.
And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Shelby Holliday for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.